Welcome back, everyone, to the XCast X-Files Podwatch episode 101. We are covering the season 9 episodes William and Release. So we are racing towards the end of the show and the end of the Podwatch. And I'm Tony Black, back for one of my last few appearances, really, on the ever-dwindling Podwatch. And I'm joined by regular host, Carl Sweeney.
Hi, Tony. Yeah, good to be here.
Great to have you, mate. And this, I think, might be the last one we do as a pair in the Podwatch. And it's, you know, two, in their own way, quite important episodes, really. You know, one for the mythology and one for one character in particular. So they're two interesting episodes at the very end of a very, very divisive and, well, that's a divisive, hated season, let's be honest. There's not many people who defend season 9, so... But they're quite important episodes. So let's start with the first one on the agenda today, and that's William, which first aired on April 28th, 2002. It was written by Chris Carter, a teleplay based on a story by Chris Carter, Frank Spotnitz, and David Duchovny. And it was also directed by Duchovny, even though at this point, obviously, he's no longer in the show, but he's on the verge of coming back for the final episode, The Truth. The show knows it's wrapping up. It's coming towards an end, and... Duchovny's popped back in order to direct this crucial episode in which Scully gives up a little their little baby, based on an interaction with a mysterious figure who may be Mulder, because he's called Miller. Do me a favour. I think this one is just so far up its own sphincter. It's a wonder it can see daylight. This episode. What do you think?
This is a very poor episode indeed, isn't it? And it's a very harmful episode to what remains of the series, but also, like, you know, it kind of tarnishes a lot of what's come before as well. It feels like a very cynical episode to me. It feels like they're kind of trying to clear the decks for a prospective second film. Whether or not that's exactly the intention or not, I don't know. That's what it feels like. And, you know, it's got, like, character motivations which feel, like, inexplicable to me. Like, you know, obviously the main thing is that Scully gives up the baby, and that's a really tough sell. And in my opinion, it doesn't sell it well enough at all. But just down to stuff like, why does Scully keep allowing Spender near William's bedroom? You know, it just doesn't seem to make any sense. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the best thing I can say about it, I suppose, I think, as you said, Duchovny's back as director. It sort of feels like if you can ignore the story and everything else about this episode... which, some of the shots are quite pretty, you know. There are points where it feels like he's trying to breathe a bit of life into it. Like there's a scene where Scully's walking down the hallway and she kind of stumbles over her shoes, which it feels like something that's kind of happened in a take by accident.
Yeah,
and it feels like Duchovny said, "Oh, we'll leave that in." He's trying to like make it, you know, inject a bit of naturalism to the proceedings. But that's about the best I can say about this one, I'm afraid, Tony. I mean, have you got anything else that you liked about this one?
Well, you know when you've got a bad episode, when your key moment was Scully tripping over her shoes, right? That's
absolutely the highlight of the hour.
The thing is, I mean, the whole thing is predicated on a stupid, stupid central core in that people actually for 1 minute think this guy's Mulder. I mean, it assumes everyone, he's thick as shit. Let's be honest. For the starters, I don't think it would have taken that long to figure out who this guy is. You know, because obviously it turns out that it's Jeffrey Spender, who we last saw, and we, you know, we talked about this when we did Two Fathers, One Son. We last saw him get shot in the X-Files office by the cigarette smoking man, and we never see him die. You know, so I said in that podcast, you know, I called shenanigans right from the off, and I said, "Hang on, we never saw his body," which means there's every chance he might still be out there. And lo and behold, they eventually decide to bring him back, super scarred, super disfigured, having been experimented. And the explanation is they tried; he was essentially the test subject to create the super soldiers before they decided to do it, you know, the way they did. And he ended up scarred, and you know, all this, he's a bit elephant man like, and you know, slightly more mumbled voice than he had, but. I don't know. I still don't. Well, even if you didn't know it was Spender, it's not Mulder. It doesn't look anything like him. It's not. He's not got the same build, you know. And it's just such a contrivance that I can't get past it. You know, every time I watch this episode, and I confess I haven't seen it a massive amount of times, but every time I have watched it, I cannot get past that simple thing that nobody would believe it, not for a minute. You know, even with the DNA, you know, it's still one of those things where. I just think it's dumb. I think it's dumb, and I think it doesn't respect the lore that's gone before it, which is ironic, given the fact that it's placed in the middle of a completely different show in a way. You know, it's a throwback to the old mythology, and it mentions things from the old mythology. I mean, nobody's mentioned the Smoking Man for two seasons, and this is the first time he gets mentioned. It calls back to, you know, Samantha a little bit. It calls back to, you know, that just everything like that, Spender and all the things that people had forgotten, or things that were so far in the past now that people weren't even really thinking about them. And you think to yourself, if you're going to do that, at least respect what's come before. And it just doesn't.
Yeah, it feels really odd as well that Doggett is the one who puts forward the idea that this is Mulder, you know, because like you say, it maybe it worked on the page when you couldn't see these people, but when you, just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. On the screen, I'm afraid.
Yeah. No, and also, I think you'd know it was Chris Owens. You know, if you're a fan, you know, even if I don't think his name appears, does it, till after the end, to the end of the credits, which is fine, which is good. But at the same time, if you're a fan and you know a little bit about how these things work, you're going to go, well, hang on, isn't that Spender?
And there'd be a million ways to prove that it wasn't Mulder as well. You know, Scully knows so much about Mulder that there's so many ways she could trip him up with, you know, asking him a bit of trivia, asking him about his video collection, or, you know, whatever it might be, you know, what he ate for lunch or whatever, you know, it could be sorted out in two minutes flat, basically.
It's one of these things that happens a lot in bad fiction. And this is the big thing that sunk Batman versus Superman for me, which is a completely different topic. But the very idea that that whole conflict in that film could have been resolved if they'd had a conversation, and they don't.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Well, until they have to. And then they go, oh, yeah, OK, well, maybe we are on the right same side. This one is one of those things where if they'd have had a proper conversation and they talked like actual people speak in real life, then none of this would have happened. You know, you would have very easily cleared up, A, it's not Mulder, B, it's Jeffrey Spender, C, this is why he's doing it. And the whole thing is meant to really bring out this torturous, what they do with Scully in season 9, which is this torturous sort of, you know, make her into a soppy drip who constantly is just pining after Mulder and all this kind of thing. You're just taking the agency away from a character who was never this lovelorn, you know, tragic puppy that she is now, and just living for a man who's gone. It's just, it's frustrating because she's a better character than that, and it just makes her really stupid, and I don't buy it.
Yeah, me neither, and I think I talked about this a little bit on the Nothing Important Happened Today episode, but like, I regard her as like one of the biggest problems with season 9, and
yeah,
in some ways I wish she hadn't returned for the season, which I know is kind of a, you know, that's quite a bold statement for an X-Files fan, but I sort of feel that way at times. And in this episode, it all builds up to this sequence, which is meant to be really like tear-jerking. You know, I think the proper word is lacrimose. You know, it's trying to get emotion out of you.
Yeah.
And I just don't feel anything in that month, you know, when we have William sent off to his magic farm or whatever. I don't feel anything except angry at the episode. I mean, when I said on Twitter that I was watching this one in preparation for the podcast, I had people message me saying, you know, get your tissues ready and that kind of thing.
Really?
I just don't feel it. And so I don't know, Tony, am I a monster or is it, you know, what's going on? Do you feel the same way?
I we're monsters together. We're the peacocks. Because I don't feel any sense of sadness because it's not earned it. You know, it's that whole thing of I would have appreciated the sacrifice that Scully makes a lot more if I didn't know the fact that they were very, very cleanly trying to set up a movie franchise where they didn't want a baby saddling them in tow. You know, and so the like you said, the cynical reasons behind what they chose to do here, you know, and what they choose to do in other episodes, like jump the shark, killing off the lone gunman, you know, these moves to try and wrap things up and set things off so Mulder and Scully can have this amazing movie career. right, and it annoys me because it's not doing the show that we've invested in the amount of justice. William is just an albatross around their neck since he was born. The build-up of William in the womb and all that stuff is great. You know, that genuinely is an interesting storyline with Scully pregnant and all this. Once he's born, he just like you said, Scully shouldn't have been in season 9. I agree. You know, the show had moved on. You should have let them two go off by, you know, Mulder and Scully go off with the baby and everything's fine. The show had moved past them, and it's just all the stories involving that Providence and Providence shit in the middle of the season. It's just rubbish. This is the same kind of thing. It just it's not earned, and the sacrifice at the end with a really mawkish, you know, final scene. I'm just like, fine, You know, the baby was miscalculated anyway, in a way. You know, once he's born, he becomes a problem, a storytelling problem. And, you know, if you're going to commit to something like this, at least do it justice. And and hopefully season 11 will undo some of the damage, because if William turns out to be a really interesting part of the new season, then
yes,
I might forgive this decision more, actually.
Yeah, I kind of agree. And I don't think this episode will ever look much better, but, you know, the trajectory of it might.
Yeah,
and,
maybe.
I sort of do like the way the William stuff kind of percolates through season 10 and then sort of comes right to the fore.
Yeah.
Towards the end of My Struggle 2. I think it was handled reasonably well. And like you say, season 11, we think it's going to be about William to a greater or lesser extent. We think we're going to see him. So it offers them the chance to make right on that storyline, I suppose. And let's hope that they do.
Well, fingers crossed. But nothing's going to erase the stench of this one. So let's swiftly move on, shall we? So the next episode, which is the not quite penultimate episode of the season, but it's very, very close, which is Release, was first aired on May the 5th, 2002, and teleplayed by David Amman from a story by John Shiban and David Amman, directed by Kim Manners. And it's essentially wrapping up Doggett in many ways. You know, the whole idea of, you know, the ongoing storyline of Doggett's son, who was tragically murdered years before. And Doggett does get a level of closure in this one when a very, you know, Frank Black, you know, calling back to Millennium, which we talked about previously, a very Frank Black-esque sort of intense FBI cadet in Scully's Quantico class starts linking up several brutal murders, and Doggett starts to learn that maybe they will resolve what happened to his son. And we got a little bit of a hint of that in Empedocles in season 8. You know, there was a suggestion that maybe his son had been killed by this strain of evil. And while this isn't quite a sequel to that, at the same time, it tracks alongside it and tells a relatively good story. I think the story's a bit contrived, but I think Robert Patrick's performance is great. And I think it does a fair level of justice to the storyline, personally. What do you think?
Yeah, there's definitely much more to like here than there was in William.
yeah.
No question about it. And Robert Patrick's excellent, like you say, and he normally is, isn't he? But he gets a real kind of chance, you know, it's kind of like a showcase for him in some ways. Mark Snow's music's good in this one as well.
Yeah.
You got this nice thing where they're doing like the chapter headings, which is kind of a nice touch, I think. I think the episode is pretty good. This one feels a bit cluttered to me, though. It sort of feels like there's a couple of things in here which could make separate episodes, you know. So, you know, like this, the cadet that you mentioned, like, I like the idea that, you know, we're trying to figure out, is he Sherlock Holmes, or is he Frank Black, or is he somebody who's actually involved in these cases, you know? Is he someone who's actually a killer, or whatever?
Mm.
I sort of feel that's kind of strong enough to sustain an episode by itself, so it's kind of jostling for attention a bit here with the stuff with, like, the mobster, you know, and I don't think that actor playing the mob guy is particularly good. I think he's a bit over the top, actually.
Yeah.
And some of that stuff's a bit much. But I do like it. Although, I mean, the stuff with Doggett's son, I'm not sure. If there hadn't been a conclusion to it, I don't think I'd have been missing it massively, you know. I do like that they've tried to wrap it up, but by the same token, it's arguably a tad unnecessary.
I think again it speaks to what they were trying to do at the end of season 9, which is give everything a conclusion. It's to try and wrap everything up with a bow. And there's two ways to look at that. There's the appreciation that they're trying to, even for a show which is very open-ended, they're trying to give some resolution. But at the same time, there are quite a lot of instances of trying to hammer over the head, you know, even in Sunshine Days, which is coming up, you know, which is a relatively standalone story, it's still trying to bang you over the head with, look, this is the final proof the X-Files was validated. You know, it's that every episode, look, this is what happened to Doggett's son. Look, this is Scully's baby being sorted out. It's like, okay, just, you don't have to finish everything. Just tell good stories. And I'd say Release is partly a good story, but it is bogged down by some really cheesy stuff. I mean, mainly Regali, the Italian, you know, he feels like he's walked out of a bad, like 80s cop show. And then you've got Falmer, who was a misjudged character to begin with anyway. I mean, oh my God. How badly does Cary Elwes overact when he shoots Regalen? Did you see his face?
Yeah.
I was cracking up at that.
Yeah, me too. And I don't know, Falmer never, you know, none of the episodes with Falmer really find a decent way to use him. Like you say, he's going to misconcede from the get-go, sadly. And, you know, also in this episode, Reyes is kind of floundering a bit. Like, I think there's a scene where she says something about, like, you know, to Doggett, like, where's your proof? And it just doesn't sound like the Reyes character that we established in the early days, you know, in season 8, basically. So it's got those things kind of running against it. And yeah, going back to what you were saying though, about kind of wrapping up the series, I sometimes sort of wish that season 9 maybe had just been like cancelled late in the day. I think you might have got, you know, this run of episodes like Jump the Shark, William, if it had been, you know, that they weren't sure the series was ending, you might have got a stronger backstretch of the season. It wouldn't have had all the wrap-up stuff, but the season may have ended up kind of better for it. And, you know, when they try and do episodes like Requiem or Existence, where they're not quite sure if the series will come back, they actually come up with pretty decent conclusions, don't they? So, you know, it might have worked out quite nicely, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it would have done. I think you would have had more interesting proper X-Files, because these, they're not proper X-Files, are they? You know, like Jump the Shark wasn't an X-File. William isn't really an X-File. This is a sort of one, really, but it's more of a dark detective episode, really, more than anything else. It's not really massively supernatural. There's the hint that the intense FBI kid is you know, psychic, or there's something weird about what's going on, but, you know, premonition or whatever, or cognition. But again, it's not really what it's about. You know, it's about Doggett becoming obsessed in a Mulder-esque way, actually, becoming really obsessed with this case, and then Reyes being the one to try and, you know, as you say, not quite fit that role of, you know, the skeptic, which she isn't, you know, she's not. She's very new age open, Reyes, which she'd be the first person who'd turn around and go, yeah, go for it, you know. She has much more of that mindset, really. So it's good. It's better than William by a long shot. And it's probably the strongest in this last run of episodes, really, because Sunshine Days is weird. And it's just weird all round. It doesn't feel like it was. And Darren and Mooney and I talk about this in the upcoming episode. But it doesn't feel like feels like it's amateurish. It's weirdly made. It doesn't feel. It feels like they'd all given up and we're having like a holiday. And then the truth is, you know, notorious for many reasons. But yeah, this is probably the strongest in this run. But you know, it's a bit of a mixed bag. Did you know, though, that Doggett's wife is his real-life wife, Robert Patrick?
Yeah, I did know that, and I quite like that stuff. You know, I think it's quite nicely played when he comments on her new furniture and stuff. It just felt like a nice little exchange. And like what you're talking about with William, where we say, you know, we've got these big emotional scenes going on and we don't really feel anything much about them. But like when it gets to the end here, when it's Doggett and his ex-wife spreading the ashes, I think it is, I do feel the emotion of that much more. So it's pretty successful in that sense. And as we've already said, Patrick's really good, isn't he? And he's kind of one of, you know, I think we're big Doggett fans, aren't we?
Yeah. But
he was, in my view, he was a great addition to the series, even though some fans, you know, still don't like him or whatever. I think he usually, when he was given, you know, given a script, he kind of gave it his best and he usually delivered. So I appreciate the episode mostly for him, I suppose.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's what makes it, even with certain dodgy or flabby elements, he's what sells it, really.
Yeah.
I would agree. So yeah, that's Release. And that's it, really. We've only got a couple more season 9 episodes, and then we're into the new inverted commas season, season 10. And we're very close to the end of the Pod Watch now. It's ramping up towards an ending. So Carl, I think are you back for any more after this?
Yeah, I think I'll be talking with Baz Greenland about my struggle and Founder's Mutation, and then that'll be my last appearance. Yeah, so it's been really fun, Tony. So it's hard to believe we've come so far, and, you know, it's nearly over.
I know. I will be back for the final episode of the Pod Watch, which isn't going to be My Struggle 2. We are doing another one, which is going to look forward a little bit, I suppose, and I'm going to keep secret who's going to be on that episode for now, but we will have a final sort of rounding up conclusion to the Podwatch and maybe reflect on some of this madness that we've been doing over the last few months. But guests on that one to be announced. So we'll keep that. We'll leave that as a cliffhanger, mysterious. But no, it's been brilliant, Carl. All the ones you've done. So I look forward to your final Podwatch coming up in a few days, and I will see you again for the finale, the big finish, which will be better than the truth. I promise.
may not be too difficult. But
we'll see. But until then, you can find us on Twitter at @X_cast and on Facebook at the XCast Basement, the podcast fan group. So come in and join us with all the chatter going on in there as we build up towards season 11. And we'll be back tomorrow for I'll be back with Darren Mooney for the Sunshine Days and the Truth. But until then, remember, trust no one.